Okay, everybody with us? Everybody wide awake? I can tell I've got my act together today. It was a tough night last night. Okay, good. We were talking about interfaces. You all might remember that we used to have a class in this room at some point earlier in this term, trying to get our heads back into that space is not too easy. Some of this stuff, obviously, you already dealt with on the exam, and I didn't get too much protest on it, so, I'm not going to push this too hard, but, we asked you on the exam three, give us examples of good interfaces in everyday life and bad interfaces in everyday life. As I mentioned, one of my favorites are these doors that you don't know whether to pull or push, and you feel like a perpetual fool standing in front of a door trying to figure out whether it's open or closed. We know about elevators with the feedback buttons that don't work, having read TOG for the exam. You know that, for example, feedback is very, very good. How many of you have been at home, for example, and, we all shout at home, "Hey, could you let the dog out?" And what happens if nobody answers? It's kind of like, "Did you hear me? Shout a second time." We do this with our computers, right? We do an input and it doesn't respond, and we go, "I don't know about you," I go, "I got this from John Stewart," who knows? So we need the feedback. In many instances, we can delegate things. The example I use here, one of my favorites of delegation, and this is actually a theoretical point made by the sociologist Bruno Latour, the sweeping policeman. Did I mention this the other day? What's a sweeping policeman? Anybody ever heard this term? Yeah. It's a speed bump. This is what they call a speed bump. Why is this a matter of delegation? Well, if you want traffic control, if you want to keep people going slowly, you can hire a cop at probably with salary and benefits about $75,000 a year just to stand there and keep people going slowly. Or you can just get a bunch of asphalt, put a bump on the pavement, and paint it bright yellow. And then people will presumably slow down. It's a way of delegating the task of speed control from a human to an inanimate object. Hence the Jamaicans, I think, appropriately call it a sweeping policeman. This notion of delegation can sometimes get very, very complicated when one is authoring an interface. It adds like more features. It adds another level of cognitive confusion quite often who are trying to use the system. I could go on endlessly about the politics of gatekeeping. This gets back to choke points, interfaces in this context. You'll recognize this from the exam, can also be choke points. Moving very quickly, easy lessons from everyday life, and this is where Don Norman is very, very insightful on this stuff. You read the piece on aesthetic design. Does good design make things work better? I asked the question in section. If you wash your car, does it run? And the fact is, obviously, we know your car doesn't run better if you just wash the outside. But I think most of us do perceive that our cars somehow feel better when they're clean. When I went to, I drive a really skanky old Civic, and my wife gets the good car, so when I wanted to drive to Toronto, we traded cars, since I don't trust mine to make it to Toronto and back, and it might get, greater possibility of getting searched. As you probably know, the easiest way to get stopped by a cop is not only to be a person of color, but to drive a kind of crusty-looking old car. It's the quickest way to get popped, so I figured, well, I'll just drive my wife's nice, pretty Mazda instead of my skanky. In any case, so my point is, I cleaned out my car, and then this morning I got into it, and I thought, wow, this is really running great. And, it's going around corners just that much faster. Don't ask Anna about how I drive. I'm crazy. So, you know, we get used to these issues of aesthetics, and we do know that aesthetics help things. We also know that, and I hate to use the term come naturally, but I think in many instances, and this is so very much culturally embedded, I will be the first to admit, but there are a lot of interfaces we can go to, and we don't even have to think about them. What's a good example of an interface that we hit and we don't, you know, it's just sort of, well, of course, this is the way you do it. Light switch. Very simple one, right? There's not too many things you can do with a light switch, except if you have a dimmer switch. How many varieties of dimmer switches are there? You add a few, and it adds the cognitive load to the user. I think ATMs, for the most part, are pretty straightforward, right? Anybody have much trouble with an ATM? Interestingly, I remember when they first came out in the late 1970s, like so many other things, it was age-dependent. In the 1970s, I was obviously roughly 30 years younger, and I went up to an ATM and I went, well, of course! But then surveys by the American Bankers Association, they did interface tests on ATMs, and they found out that, well, for people under roughly 30, 35 years old, the basic ATM interface, which frankly hasn't changed in roughly 30 years, that basic interface was real easy for us, but they put it in front of somebody 55 or older and they'd go, what do I do? This is a computer. I don't know how to do this. Right? Because it was very much, again, age dependent. Another good indicator is if you have to have a lot of text to explain how to work something, you know it's probably bad. I don't know if I mentioned to the lecturer, I think I mentioned it in section, when I was lecturing in Lugano, Switzerland, on precisely this topic last May. I went to the restroom before the lecture, and they had a automatic towel machine, a towel dispenser in the bathroom. And, you know, it had one of these little sensors, so it knew that you were new, right? It had a proximity sensor, so it would spew paper out at you. But it had certain operating parameters that had to be explained. And this being Switzerland, of course, it had to be explained in four separate languages. So in order to use this towel dispenser, which was automatic, you had to stand there and select which language that was relevant to you, then read the text in order to use this automatic device. That, to me, is a good indicator that somebody kind of screwed up on the design here. It's automatic, people. You don't need a text. Well, then why is that text there? So I read the text and I realized, oh, so what they're saying is I just put my hands under it and out comes the towel, right? Really helpful. Does it have affordances? An affordance is simply something like a handle, something like you can hook onto so that you have some place to get traction on it, some place to hook into it and make it useful. Some systems, I would argue, are, if not consciously, certainly subconsciously built to insult the user. Examples of this, I can't come with any off my head, but I always notice them and note them and then forget them. It's an aging issue. Anybody run into these things where you go to a device and you're made to feel stupid? Anybody? I mean, I find this with phones. It says to me, Bob, you're over 30 and you probably shouldn't be using this device since you don't have any friends anyway. Why do you need a phone? But, you know, there's all kinds of messages that interfaces communicate to people. Good. Any questions on that? So in looking at different interfaces, and we'll go through a few of these. And the first one is, why do we need a sign? This is one of my favorites. This is from a bathroom in the UK. No, I'm not fixated on bathrooms. Anna thinks I am, but I'm not really. And we see this little device here. What is this? Yeah, they have to tell you it's a mop sink. Because what do you think people would do with... You don't want to ask. Now... if you're in Southeast Michigan, that might actually be another device. What might that be? If you're Muslim, it's for washing your feet and hands before prayer. And we're starting to see some of those get installed here. And so the sign will necessarily have to be changed to say, I don't know what it would say. How would we explain that on campus so that people don't pee or do whatever they do in this porcelain device. Another one, you know, some of these designs are just basically dumb. You've seen these in libraries, and the basic message to the user here is steal a book and forget ever having a family. It's a device with a very sort of severe default mode. So let me get a little more theoretical here, and that is interfaces have meanings. Interfaces should communicate in the first instance how the device is supposed to be used, how you're to use, and how this thing works for you. But there's always a problem. When a device is new, remember, I define technology as something made by humans that we're not fully familiar with. In other words, is this technology? Is this thing in my hand? Is this technology? What do you think? How many people would say, I can't even see you, so you can answer whatever you wish. But how many people would say, oh, well, that's a piece of technology? No, it's a pair of glasses, right? We know what glasses are. There's no debate. We wear glasses to help us, a fashion statement. But beyond that, there's basically not much to talk about with glasses, right? Pretty banal object, so we don't consider it technology. We've reached what I call closure on eyeglasses. As a culture, as a society, we know what eyeglasses do, we know what they're for, we know what the purpose is, and we don't have a lot to talk about with them. So we might have different sort of eyeglass designs and that sort of thing. We might have, you know, the kind that you can abuse and roll over on and that sort of thing. But for the most part, we know what they are. What does that mean? It means that in using a device that has reached closure, we don't have to closure culturally wide. We don't have to think a lot about it. Another good example that I've mentioned before, it's a favorite Southeastern Michigan example, of course, is the automobile. You get into a car and, you know, how much time does it take? Very, very little. Why? Because we know how to do cars. We know what cars are for. We know what different type, different size vehicles are for. We're not going to use a school bus to, I don't know, go grocery shopping. We're not going to use a Honda Civic to move furniture, right? We have closure. We have a fairly fine-grained closure on what we think about motor vehicles in this society, so the interfaces, frankly, are fairly straightforward. We haven't reached closure on these things. This is why, have we reached closure? What do y'all think? How much confusion do you have when you try and borrow somebody else's phone? If it's a different brand from your own. A lot of confusion? Now, why is that? Why do we get confused when we use other people's phones? Anybody? Different buttons, different layout. A green button might mean on, but then again, a red button might mean off, but it also might mean on. Karen yesterday over lunch showed me her Sprint phone. Does anybody have a Sprint phone? And what's the on button on that one say? I think it says end, if I recall. So to start a Sprint phone, it's sort of like the Windows interface. In order to shut down Windows, of course, you hit the Start button. In order to start a Sprint phone, you hit the End button. Now, tell me if that's not counterinstinctual. Okay. Thank you, Bridget, because I still have trouble with this. I think I mentioned this. Right? Which is which? Right. If they say this, talk about heavily coded, the line means this or this, right? That's a visual convention that we have in our culture, right? We use a slash to give you a choice. And so we get circle, diagonal, vertical, and that's supposed to be meaningful. How many of you find that meaningful? Probably most of you, right? A few. How many people look at this and say, what in the world is that about? Yeah, I look, good, you're making me feel younger. I look at this and you know, Bridget, maybe you don't have a problem with it. I look at it and it's like, I have absolutely no clue. Yeah. Oh, so it's like this? Oh. Now that's even more opaque. How many people would understand that sign if they saw it? Portland would, a few would, okay. Say what? Yeah. And oh, okay, so right on a Mac you have this one. And it's like, oh, it's an erection. No, erection. No, it's, I'm not sure what it is, right? It means, that's obvious, right? Obviously that means push here. The reason, funny, Anna had to point this out to me. I hit this button, not very often, because I never shut off my machine. But the only reason I know what that symbol means is because I know that that's where the on-off button is. And oh, okay, so that must mean what that symbol means. In other words, I'm doing it in reverse, which is something you should not have to do. How many times do you go to a computer interface and it's lined up, like a Microsoft product's my favorite, where it's lined up, or worse still, Adobe products, where you've got all of these icons, and you look at these icons and it's like, what in the world is that icon? So what do you do to figure it out? You look in your manual, always a bad sign if you have to open up a manual, or you roll your mouse over it and hope that you have little mouse messages or whatever they're called, and it says, oh, this allows you to start a new page, or to print the file, or to generate a PDF, or something that you didn't even know you could do. So you have to go across and hope that the little thing shows up, and then it'll disappear before you finish reading it. And you go, okay, so then you got... Right, we've all been through this. I don't need to beat it to death. Is that closure is culturally relative. Closure is a process through which a society essentially comes to a consensus on a design, on a purpose of a given technical system. Once there's consensus, then we can begin to get some kind of a standardization of interfaces, because indeed, as we know from our readings last week, one of the things that interfaces optimally do is that they implicitly rank tasks by order of priority, right? And until everybody has sort of a consensus on what the order of priority is in operating something, you can't really get that ranking. One of the things arguably we see is that the process of reaching closure allows a set of standards, either implicit or explicit, to emerge. That is, we can begin to get relatively standard interfaces. How standard is the automobile interface for the driver? What's standard in it? Steering wheel, right? I remember back in the 60s, there were countless different efforts to reinvent the steering wheel, and it was like, why? Right? They make perfect sense. You know, you turn it this way and the car goes that way. Funny thing about that, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It cognitively maps well. Speedometer, right? Faster, well, from your perspective, faster, slower, right? On a timeline, I was actually at a hydrology lecture about 10 days ago, and somebody was giving a history of Great Lakes water levels, and I was looking at it and it made no sense, and then I realized, the past is over here and the present is over here. So the past moves right to left? I don't think time moves right to left. No, it moves left to right. Maybe that's the way we do languages. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, if you live in a culture that writes from right to left, does everything then get inverted otherwise? I pity left-handers in right-to-left languages. Smear, smear, smear. Yeah. In any case, no, right-handers in right-to-left languages, you particularly using fountain pens. All that said, my point here then is that in time, as we reach closure, we can get things regularized within a culture. We still have problems on cars with, what, headlights, windshield wipers, what else? Automatic or stick shift. But once you're within that framework, well, automatics still aren't fully mapped, and sticks still aren't. Yeah, they still have them on the tree. And one of my favorites is if you're driving in the old British Empire and you're on the other side of the vehicle, you try and shift gears and your door opens. it's not very safe. Good idea to keep your door locked, I guess, so you don't make stupid mistakes. Another problem, too, is, of course, things don't move across cultures very well. You can move an artifact or a system from one culture to another, and oftentimes lose a lot of people. Finally, one thing that I've learned in my work in museums, and it's similarly slightly less so in libraries, is that actually the arrangement of presentation of an interface, in this case a museum, is a good example, sort of gives a whole story. I mean, one of my favorite museums is the Reina Sofia in Madrid, which is where Picasso's famous Guernica painting is, and it's about the most classically arranged art museum I've ever seen. You start on the top floor and you work your way down, and at the top floor are the oldest things, and everything gets newer as you go down. So essentially you get a narrative of the history of art that's embedded in the interface of the museum itself. It's what I call, when I teach museum stuff, an ambulatory narrative. That is, as you walk along through the museum, you get a history of art. You could say, okay, in this part of the museum, we've got paintings. And in this part of the museum, we've got predominantly orange paintings. Would that be a good way to do it? Yeah, you like that, Brian? You'd go to that museum because you like orange stuff and not green stuff. Who knows? Frankly, I would say, well, so you've got a Picasso next to Filippo Lippi, a late medieval painting. It's like, why do you have these next to each other? Well, you could say, well, we'll have all pictures of women in the same section. And, okay, you could get something thematic there, but it's really like, what kind of meaning do you get out of it? In other words, another way of arranging an interface, another way of arranging information generally, is a way of directing the user towards certain tasks, towards certain cognitive conclusions, etc., which I think is very, very important. Now, every interface is built on a set of symbolic representations, some more opaque than others. Granted, I find these completely opaque. I have, every time I look at this combination, I have to think about it. And I've been known to have several devices on and not know which is on, which is off, and to look at one that I know is on or off, and then see what position the switch is in, and then go, oh, okay, this must be it. I mean, this is a cognitive load that most of us shouldn't have to deal with. Some of your readings from last week, I think, very interestingly pointed out, cognitive science research is telling us this, that at some level, icons often sort of get processed pre-linguistically. That is, there's certain things we know, for example, that smell is something that we as humans react to in a very sort of elemental way. You know, they say our lower brain, our hippocampus, processes smell much better than it does, say, poetry, right? Because poetry takes a lot of linguistic skill and sophistication to get much out of poetry. So it takes much more cognitive processing. And by that token, in many cases, icons really do help us out. At the same time, though, with smell being, shall we say, very, very elemental, this might be an explanation for the reason we have very few ways of talking about smell. How do we talk about smell? Smells like. We don't, when we have color, we don't say that is the color like something. We just say it's red or it's orange or it's green. Right? We don't have any essential notion of smell. We don't say, well, that smells brown, or that smells bliss, or that smells black. Right? We don't have words for smell. All we have are sort of second order references to smell. My point here then is that a system of representation, which is inherently what an interface actually is, runs into many, many fairly thick, and if you think on it without expending too much effort, I think you can immediately discover that there's lots of stuff in there that requires different levels of cognitive processing, different levels of cultural knowledge, different levels of translation of symbolic representations of things or tasks. Finally, one of the biggest problems of mapping certain kinds of operations is that a lot of knowledge is tacit, that is, it can't be made explicit, and so trying to make it clear, cooking to me is a very good example of this. Being a good cook requires more than following recipes. It requires knowing when the butter smells right when you're sautéing something. You know, does it have just that right smell, because too early it doesn't smell right, too late you've already burned it, etc. Garlic's even trickier this way. If you try sautéing garlic, there's an art to it. Can it be explained? Sort of. But when you think about cooking garlic, you have to say, well, do it, and you've gone too far, or nope, you need to go further. And so how does one learn that? You learn it largely, as with any sort of tacit operation, you learn by doing. So let me just give you a few quickies on... Oh. Okay, let me give you... We'll just skip through this. Let me give you, some good examples of some very disturbing interfaces. As you might recall, the U.S. military invaded a country in the Middle East back in 2003, showed up, expected to be there about 6 months when they'd be able to leave, and so didn't, you know, prepare anybody for actually being in that country. Saw an emergency DOD contracted an interface company of sorts, and they gave GIs these little wallet cards. This is for the GIs in. I invite you to look at these at higher res on the website. This is like, how do you deal with people whose language you don't understand and you've got to get information from them? Do they have a bomb strapped to their body? Is it in the vehicle, a car? Is it in a truck? Is the gunner in a building, beside a building, on top of a building, sitting in a hole behind there? Does he have a rocket? What is that, a bazooka or something? I have no idea. So you have to imagine carrying on a conversation with a local, and he's sitting here thinking, if anybody sees me talking with this American, they'll be dead. And here's the American madly gesticulating like this, and the guy's going, I really don't want to be here. I could get killed for this. My favorite, though, is... check under the tongue for any IEDs. Make sure to take the toupee off to make sure that there's not a bomb under the toupee. We bald guys really can sympathize with that. I'll close on this one because I'm a little over time anyway. I had a meeting in the medical dean's office, which is that red box there. Those of you familiar with that part of campus, I invite you to sit down with this. Which way is north here? Yes, north is to the left, following the standard convention, right? The north is always on the left, right, on any map? Yeah, right. And notice the lettering here, Huron, nothing works. This is the most screwed up map I have ever seen. I got this on email, and what I really liked was recognizing... some staff member in the med school probably spent 3 or 4 hours putting this together. you know, using Illustrator, some high-end software. How could we solve this problem, just parenthetically? Say what? Draw it by hand, that's a quick one. Rudy M's got that one. Say what? Delete it and use a campus map. Delete it and use a campus map. All of this university website. Why do it again? But of course, we've got to stay employed. Thank you very much. We'll see you on Thursday. Say what? Yes, there is section today for those of you in my sections.